Hello, you are listening to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon, and we continue our science article. Today is June 26. Thank you for joining us. And the title of our article is Robot Bees. Back in the studio with me, I have Pauline and Joe. Welcome back, panelists.
Thanks so much. We had a lot of fun talking yesterday, I thought, so I'm glad to come back and continue.
Pauline, what do you think so far, out of the things that we discussed, is the main issue here?
Oh, goodness. Well, I guess the main issue is just that the natural way that the world has had for pollinating and reproducing plants, the plants that we eat and all the other plants in the world, it has dramatically declined, the bees. So a lot of people are scrambling to figure out an answer to that, and some people's answer is robots.
That's right. We've talked a lot about robots here in advance. Some of them serve you coffee, and now maybe some of them will be used as pollinators. Well, Joe is also back with us. Welcome back, Joe.
Hey, good to be here.
Joe, what is something else from yesterday that you thought, wow, I'm just amazed by this fact or this issue?
I think the main thing that really surprises me is seeing that process, and yesterday Pauline was talking about this, how the article really walks you through the process of going from, okay, we have a pollination crisis, how are we going to solve it? You go from brushes to cotton swabs to sprays, and finally, drones. We need drones. And seeing that process kind of unfold, and we're going to talk about it more today, it's very interesting.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about, you know, how people have been looking at this for a while, and in my research, I found that Harvard University actually introduced the first robo-bees in 2013, and they've improved on that. They can stick to surfaces, they can swim underwater, and they can dive in and out of water. So that's pretty crazy.
That's really crazy.
Advanced a lot. They can do several tricks, but they still can't be remotely controlled. So anyway, there's still a lot of work to be done on these, but it's good that there are others out there working on this. And I actually found out also that Walmart is involved, and they have filed for a patent for a robot bee as well. And many of you probably are familiar with Walmart. It is a huge chain store in the United States, and it's also in other parts of the world. And so they are in on the action as well. And I think that's good. More people in on it. Hopefully, you know, someone will find the solution that's needed.
Right. I mean, you want to have as many minds and brains working out this issue as possible and finding the best solution.
And it shows what a big issue it is that there are so many big companies or organizations looking at it, that everybody, many people anyways, have come to the same conclusion. This is a major issue, and there's probably a large economic value for themselves as a company if they can come up with a solution.
Yeah. That's another huge motivation, I'm sure. Well, we have a lot more to discuss concerning these robot bees. So if you have your magazine, please open it up to page 37, and we'll have our first reading for today.
Using drones. Scientists have thought about using drones, but haven't figured out how to make free-flying robot insects that can rely on their own power source without being attached to a wire. It's very tough work, said senior author Eijiro Miyako, a chemist at the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan. Miyako's particular contribution to the field involves a gel, one he'd considered a mistake years before and stuck in a storage cabinet. When it was rediscovered a decade later, it hadn't dried up or degraded at all. I was so surprised because it still had a very high viscosity, Miyako said.
All right, and so they're trying to figure all of this out. They have these drones, but they don't do exactly what they want them to do. So they've thought about using drones, but they haven't figured out how to make free-flying robot insects. And, you know, there needs to be some power source, or maybe there's a wire attached to it. But they just want this to be a free-flying device.
Right. Some of the tricky things that you're going to find with this hardware is the drone has to be very small. but it also has to have enough power to actually pollinate for a long stretch of time. You can't just send it out there for maybe 10, 15 minutes, pollinate a bit, and then have it come back. It needs to be probably out in the field for a significant length of time.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, this particular drone, as you see a photo of it there on the top of page 36, is 4 centimeters wide, and it weighs 15 grams. And, you know, so I'm sure how big it is, all of that plays a part.
Right. And so, you know, there are so many issues that need to be solved before you can really roll out this kind of solution in a way that will be significant to solving the crisis.
And we meet the author, the senior author of this work. And what is his name? He's from Japan.
He's from Japan. His name is Eijiro Miyako, and he's a chemist at the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan. And so he's coming at it from not an engineering perspective, but a chemical one.
All right.
And we learn that he has a particular, very special contribution that he's added to this field, to this conversation about robots and whether or not they can be used for pollination. And, you know, kind of crazily enough, it's not an engineering piece. It's not that he came up with a certain way for it to fly or for it to be designed. It involves a gel, just a sticky gel yeah. that might be a major key in figuring out this puzzle.
He found it sort of by accident. It was considered to be a mistake years before. And he had stuck it in a storage cabinet somewhere. And then later came back and found this gel. It says when it was rediscovered a decade later. So it's been sitting there for 10 years. What happened?
Well, he discovered that this gel, it hadn't dried up or degraded. And degraded just means to change chemically from a more complex structure to more simple ones. So the gel was just as good then as it was 10 years ago.
So this was very telling. It showed him that, hey, there's something here that maybe we can use. And he says he was surprised because it still had a very high, what is this word?
Viscosity. So that means it's still thick and sticky, which I would assume are the qualities that it had had before a decade earlier and now still continues to have.
So the moral of the story is sometimes you may think there's a mistake, but it could be the answer to your problem. It could be a solution. And so I think the way this came about is just adds a lot to the story, doesn't it?
I'm going to give this as my excuse the next time, gosh, my husband finds that I've just left a glass of something sitting somewhere or something in the refrigerator for too long. I'll be like, you never know. Maybe if I let it sit there a little longer.
Yes. It's an experiment, right?
It's an experiment.
What also shows you a lot about how the scientific world works, where even a mistake can be helpful later on down the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because he could have just as easily thrown the thing away.
Yeah.
But instead, oh, no, it's an experiment I did. Better put it in the storage cabinet.
Maybe he's a pack rat like me. He doesn't throw anything away.
No, I did think if you're a scientist with any kind of like hoarding tendencies, like that's just a terrible story. But no, really, on the other hand, it's also very inspiring, right? Like I feel like you can put together some very nice life lessons about the things that we think are failures or mistakes can really turn around to be really useful for us in our future and maybe exactly what we needed for a future problem.
Yeah, and you know, he had to be a very observant. Of course, he's a scientist, so he should be observant, and he was paying attention to, hey, this, he thought it would have dried up or something. It didn't. So he looked into it further. And we're going to learn more about what they did with this gel and much more as we get into our next reading for today.
Improving on a sticky idea. The chemist noticed that when dropped, the gel absorbed an impressive amount of dust from the floor. Miyako realized this material could be very useful for picking up pollen grains. He took ants, slathered the ionic gel on some of them, and let both the gelled and ungelled insects wander through a box of tulips. Those ants with the gel were far more likely to end up with a dusting of pollen than those that were free of the sticky substance. The next step was to see if this worked with mechanical movers. He and his colleagues chose a 4-propeller drone and attached horse hairs to its smooth surface to mimic a bee's fuzzy body. They coated those horse hairs in the gel and then maneuvered the drones over Japanese lilies, where they would pick up the pollen from one flower and then deposit the pollen at another bloom, thus fertilizing it. The scientists looked at the hairs under a scanning electron microscope and found that the robots whose horse hairs had been coated with the gel had on the order of 10 times more pollen than those hairs that had not been coated with the gel. Miyako does not think such drones would replace bees altogether, but could simply help bees with their pollinating duties.
Thank you, Joe, with that reading. We appreciate that. Well, we are improving on a sticky idea, and this, of course, Joe, is a play on words, isn't it? That's why we have sticky and quotation marks.
Oh, I love play on words. And sticky, we're talking about viscosity, right? And so he has this gel that is super sticky, and so he has quite a sticky idea.
And we will sometimes use sticky in a metaphorical way. We'll talk about a sticky situation, and that means like there's a problem. It's very difficult to navigate it in a way that's not going to make it worse. So they might be alluding to that as well, about this big problem they have. They don't want to make it worse, but they have an idea.
We often talk about when you're coming up with ideas, you just try anything and see what sticks. You know, if it works, it'll stay on there and last.
Well, you guys are on a roll anymore. Sticky idioms.
If I think of any.
All right, throw it in there. Well, we have been talking about this gel that this chemist found, the scientist from Japan. And we see that he noticed that when dropped, the gel absorbed an impressive amount of dust from the floor. So this is a good thing.
It is, but I also would like to know, I feel like there's a little extra story in there that we're not being told. Like, it sounds like, oh, what an interesting observation, what an intelligent scientist. But what I want to know is, like, did he accidentally knock it over? Like, how did this happen that it dropped on the floor? It sounds like another accident occurred. But then, again, he learned from it, right? He got some very valuable insight.
Yeah. It sounds like Miyako's life is like this series of happy accidents. He, like, accidentally discovers this thing that he thought didn't work out, and then he accidentally drops.
Yes, or maybe he planned it all that way. We don't know, right?
Maybe so, he threw it on the floor.
He realized this material could be very useful for picking up pollen grains, of course, because when it was dropped on the floor, there was dust on it, and so, hey, that could be used to collect pollen. So he started an experiment. He took ants, and he slathered the ionic gel on some of them and let both the gelled and ungelled insects go throughout a box of tulips. Sounds like a fun experiment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Slathered is a great word. We use it whenever we're talking about applying, like a substance that isn't quite a liquid, but it's not a solid either. So things like jelly or butter, we slather on your toast. But if you slather it, you're not just putting a little bit. You're putting a lot on. So it gives you a visual, too, of these ants just, like, loaded down, just covered with this gel.
I love to slather butter on my toast. That's probably not a good thing. But or peanut butter as well.
It's okay. It's the science article, not a health article.
That's right.
I'm not going to judge you today.
Thank you, Joe. All right. And then we have that word ionic, which is referring to ions, which are atoms or a group of atoms with an electrical charge as a result of having lost or added one or more electrons. That takes me back to science class in high school.
Reading this, I was having flashbacks of science projects in the science fair that was like mandatory in my school. And I wish I would have come up with something cool to do like this. This sounds really cool.
Right.
Yeah, it does. And I will say, like, with that, to be honest, many of you may know I'm not a super technical person, so I looked at the definition, saw this, and just thought, like, oh, okay, they're giving me a little bit more information about the chemical components or the composition of this gel, if that's the kind of thing you're interested in, then it's giving you a little bit more information on that. Or if you're someone like me who doesn't, who's not quite that technical, then you just kind of like go like, okay.
Right.
That's what they were trying to
get. Yeah, they put gel on there. That's
they put something, some kind of gel on there. I don't need to know exactly what's inside of it. A sticky gel.
Well, so that's the funny thing. You get the scientific explanation, ionic gel, as well as the layman explanation, sticky thing.
Yes, there we go. Something for everyone. All right, so they put this on some of the ants and some of the insects they did not put it on. And, of course, you're doing that to see what happens. What's the difference? So those ants with the gel were far more likely to end up with a dusting of pollen. So, again, you know, his suspicions were kind of, you know, answered here. He saw that dust was picked up when the gel dropped on the floor. And now we also see that the pollen was able to stick to the gel. And so this is good news. And, you know, that's why that they're using this on the drone.
Right. Apparently, it's not the end-all, be-all. We say mm-hmm. it wasn't the full answer. I'm assuming that he knows that ants are not going to be able to pollinate, that wasn't the final answer. It just said, like, okay, this is a good direction to go. Mm. We know that this gel works to move pollen, but ants aren't going to do it for us, so we have to see if it'll work with something else, which is, we know, the drones that they're looking at.
Right.
Right. And what I like about this particular paragraph is how it walks you through the experiment. You know, it's really important to remember that for scientists, hard numbers really matter. And so they have to demonstrate exactly how well that gel works, which is why you also have ungelled ants walking around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, of course, we know ungelled ants aren't going to really do much, but you need to be able to say by what percentage was the gel more effective.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see how they work on that hypothesis, mm-hmm. the idea that the scientist has, mm-hmm. as well as the controlled group and uncontrolled group as he's running this experiment to see just how well the ionic gel works.
Yeah, and it's nice to look into the process of, you know, how scientists work. I'm not a scientist, you know, I studied science some in school, but it's nice to know how they work all of these details out and how they perform these experiments. And as Pauline was saying, you know, they want to use this with a machine. So the next step was to see if this worked with mechanical movers.
I like that it says here, you know, he and his colleagues chose a 4-propelled drone. So it's also that, you know, reminding us that it's probably a very large team that's working together on this. Joe pointed out this guy is a chemist. He's not the engineer. So he comes up with this really interesting substance that due to his chemistry experiments he's come up with and found some interesting possible applications for. But then he has to go to the engineers and say, okay, let's work together on the machine part. How can we put this gel together with the machine to make it work? And together, somehow, they came up with this idea of attaching horse hairs to the smooth surface of the machine, making it more like the fuzzy body of a bee, and then putting this sticky gel on the hairs.
Now, why did they choose horse hairs, I wonder?
I find this really interesting, and I don't know exactly what the answer must be, and like why specifically horse hairs, whether or not it's because it's a very coarse kind of hair.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
And maybe a natural substance would work better than an artificial kind
maybe,
of
maybe, yeah.
Hair?
Why not some sort of string or some sort of, you know, other substance, but they chose horse hairs of all things. And so they have the gel and they have the horse hairs and they're attaching this stuff to the smooth surface to mimic a bee's fuzzy body. And so mimic just means to copy. And so they coated those horse hairs in the gel and then maneuvered the drones over Japanese lilies.
So maneuvered, of course, just means they moved it in a specific way over these Japanese lilies. I thought it was interesting. I hadn't really thought so much about why horsehair, but what I had thought about was why lilies. And then what immediately jumped out in my mind was that there's a lot of flowers that you don't really see the pollen as much, or I don't notice getting the pollen on me when I'm buying some flowers at a market. But lilies, I always do notice. They've got so much pollen. They've got this bright yellow, you know, like thing of pollen that you just see really. So I thought, oh, that makes sense. They're picking probably one of the easier flowers to test this on. Although it also reminded me, like, wow, you know, not every flower is going to have such an easy access pollen area. Mm. You know, those bees, sometimes they go way down into the flower where they get the nectar or whatever they need, as well as getting pollen all on them. So again, whatever results they get from this, I'm sure are encouraging, but it's that reminder that they're starting with probably their biggest, easiest target, something like a lily. Well, they're eventually, if they really want to use it for a lot of agricultural purposes, they're going to have to do all different types of flowers that have different shapes and forms. It might be very difficult to access the pollen area.
That's a really good point.
Right. And the other layer of complexity is, if you want to be very effective with that kind of program, you need to be able to design kind of computer programs and algorithms so they can see a certain kind of flower and know how to interact with it, which is its own sort of layer of complexity.
Oh, yeah. This gets really complicated, doesn't it? Well, so they are going around and they are picking up the pollen from one flower and depositing it on another one, and that is the fertilization process. Well, the scientists looked at the hairs under a scanning electron microscope, another technical term. This is a microscope in which the surface of an object is scanned, and they use beams to do this. Beams of electrons, and there is a three-dimensional image that is created. And
that part was so interesting to
me. Just throw that in there.
Once again, I mean, to be honest, all of the stuff before that kind of just like went right over my head. I don't pay too much attention always to the super scientific explanations of how that particular microscope works, but I didn't realize that there were microscopes like this that wouldn't just, it's not just a picture that you're seeing, it's actually a 3D model of sorts, and that's pretty incredible. What an amazing technology.
It is, and so they used this microscope to look at the hairs, and they found something. What did they find?
Well, they found that, you know, the robots whose horse hairs had been coated with the gel had on the order of 10 times more pollen than those hairs that had not been coated with the gel.
Yeah, which is an incredible amount, right? That's pretty dramatic. Mm-hmm. It's a very marked difference, so I'm sure they were very excited about that. Although I had a question after reading that paragraph. What I was really curious to know is, do they know if it's actually leaving any pollen behind? Is the gel so sticky that they're taking pollen? You know, the idea of pollination, of course, is that the bees will pick up pollen from one flower, and then when they go to another flower and rub against it, some of that other pollen drops into the flower and it picks up some others. So you're not just picking it up, but you're also letting it go in another flower. So I'm curious to know, and I'm sure if we looked it up more, they'd have more information on this. I'm sure they looked into it, but the question that remained in my head was not only how much did it pick up, but how much did it drop off from the different flowers?
Right. Yeah, that we would need more details for that. And I'm sure they're looking into all of that. Maybe didn't give us that information here.
Right. And here, you know, that, I think that is a very valid question. And I imagine as they're experimenting with this more and they're seeing how much it's picking up, the more you pick up, the more you have to drop off. Which I think is kind of another little factor they're trying to figure out. And so you'll notice here that, again, they're constantly trying this with the gel, without the gel, and seeing just how effective that gel really is to this whole robot bee equation.
Yeah. And maybe how much gel, you know, I'm sure there's also, there'll be eventually, if this continues forward and they decide it's really the right way to go with pollination, I'm sure they'll start to have the ideal amount, the ratio of gel to drone for what kind of plants. You know, they have a whole world of calculations, I'm sure, still to do.
Yes, that might drive me crazy after a while, but you're making progress, right? And so that's the important thing. And we do have a phrase here that we should mention, on the order of, and maybe an easier word would just be approximately. So approximately 10 times more pollen was on the hairs that had gel on it, and then those without the gel. And Miyako does not think such drones would replace bees altogether. We've talked about that already, that hopefully this is just something that, you know, could help out for now, but eventually there will be other solutions. Hopefully there will be more bees. But this could simply help bees with their pollinating duties, and that's the goal here. They're not trying to, of course, replace bees. That's not the best solution, but it could be a solution for now.
Absolutely. I think most of us agree that nature has provided the best solution already, and that we would hope to be able to, you know, be good conservationists, be good stewards of the world that we've been given and the nature that we have. But when there are moments where that breaks down, hopefully we can come in and find creative solutions while also trying to restore the natural system.
Yeah, you said something that's very important, being good stewards of what we have been given. And we can think about this in many areas of our life with, you know, our money. We can think of that, but we can also think of that with nature and the resources that we are using. You know, there more and more people are being born, and the earth is being, you know, populated very heavily. And so our resources, we have to be more careful with that, and something to not only think about, but we can think of ways to take action. But in this case, there's still more work to be done. There on page 37, we have some information about that.
Right. We already talked about all the different questions that come up in our mind, the different, you know, experiments that we think they'll have to do in order to make this better. But, and they give us a few more we hadn't even talked about. It says small drones will need to become more maneuverable. So they'll have to be able to move them more easily, and they'll need to be more energy efficient. Joe was talking about that a little bit earlier, about they're really small, but they need to be powered for long distances, for a long amount of time, as long as possible. So how are they going to do that? And they also have to be smarter.
Yes, all of these things they're working on. And they need to have better GPS and artificial intelligence, programmed to travel, and highly effective search and pollinate patterns. And so sounds like, Joe, there's a lot out there that needs to be done.
So. Right. And so even though there's been a great step forward, there are still many more steps to take.
And doesn't it just give you so much respect for bees? Like, you think they're just this little insect buzzing around, and then you think of how many extraordinarily highly qualified people are just pouring years of study and work into trying to make a machine that will come close to replicating what they do. I think the other thing to take away from this is to have a greater awe and respect for nature in all of its different forms, for what it's doing, because it is extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible, to fully replicate it.
And it really shows us the complexity and of nature and the design behind it, and how intricate everything is. We see that in our own bodies, and we see that in nature in general, and that it's just incredible, the design behind it and how amazing that is. Well, we are all out of time for today's show, but we hope you will join us again next time here on Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, this is Brandon.
I'm Pauline.
I'm Joe.
We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.